Good afternoon. You're listening to 91.9 KVCR News. I'm KVCR reporter Benjamin Perper. Today we're talking about the December 2nd, 2015 terrorist attack in San Bernardino. The attack left lasting scars on the city and the region, but it affected the survivors the most. Now, almost 3 years after the attack, KVCR is taking an in-depth look at the survivors, their mental health, and their struggle to get treatment through workers' comp.
Good morning. I would like to welcome everyone today to the Board of Supervisors meeting. Also welcome those joining.
It's January of 2018, over 2 years after the terrorist attack in San Bernardino that killed 14 people and wounded 22. Today, the San Bernardino County Board of Supervisors is voting on a $175,000 contract to create a memorial for the victims. The supervisors approve the contract unanimously without any problems, but then the meeting opens up to public comment.
It is fitting that such a memorial be established. However, that memorial will be tarnished for a generation in the living memories of those very survivors and families of the victims you memorialize as they suffer for the rest of their lives the psychiatric scars of the willful neglect of the county.
That's Robert Fredericks, an insurance specialist who personally knows several of the victims. Speaking directly to the Board of Supervisors during public comment, Fredericks describes how survivors are being denied treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, through the county-funded workers' comp plan.
Of four survivors I know personally, three have had PTSD treatment denied. One was denied counseling benefits for 19 months, and after 12 approved sessions, further treatments were denied.
Because they were at work when the attack happened, the survivors had to go into the workers' compensation system. And because they worked for the county, they had to go into the county-funded workers' comp system. Part of that system is something called utilization review. That's where physicians have to submit requests for their patients' treatment for the county's approval. Anything from stool softener to opioids to psychotherapy. And it's through a utilization review that Frederick says survivors are being denied treatment.
I would encourage you to table the $175,000 contract and repurpose those dollars as well as the reserve fund for the memorial to provide the PTSD treatment these survivors need and deserve.
To find out more about what kind of psychological trauma the 12-2 survivors are going through, I reached out to Nicole Borquin. This issue is personal to her. Not only is she a licensed psychotherapist, but her brother-in-law Ray is one of the people who survived the incident. That's given her personal as well as clinical insight into their struggle with PTSD.
What happens in a trauma is that your normal, you know, our normal coping strategies that we have to deal with stress, those don't work anymore. And so if you're denied or if you don't have access to, you know, counseling right away, what ends up happening is there's increase in, you know, blood pressure and self-medication. That's really what I worry about most.
Borquin says that traumatic incidents like the December 2nd attack don't just affect the survivors. They affect their entire family.
And many times the children don't understand, and even the spouses, if they're not in counseling, they're not understanding why is the parent pulling away, because that's what it looks like. Why is my parent not available? Why are they not going to my ball games like they used to? Or why are they sitting, you know, in their room all day? You know, why are they not making dinner? It's that little type of stuff, you know, those little things.
Borquin says that based on her clinical knowledge and personal experience with her brother-in-law, the survivors are likely undergoing what she calls secondary trauma, as in struggling to receive counseling through workers' comp has added an extra layer of trauma to their experience.
So now, if they are in session, and, you know, some of them, of course, you know, just out of pocket had to go pay, they were actually dealing with not even the trauma right away. They were dealing with how do you deal with the county of San Bernardino not helping you.
What's sad is that, you know, these people, the Board of Supervisors individually, they are not bad people. They are good people. But the tragedy is when good people, you know, do the wrong things.
That's Robert Fredericks, who spoke out at the Board of Supervisors meeting. He works in insurance, but he also describes himself as a volunteer citizens advocate for the 12-2 survivors. He's spoken to the board about the survivors' struggles in the workers' comp system nearly a dozen times now.
I have felt compelled, in the absence of others having awareness and motivation and opportunity, to speak for the benefit, you know, of the, you know, the 12-2 shooting survivors. It's not official. I've not been appointed. I've taken it upon myself.
Frederick's main argument is that the county supervisors could override utilization review, the process where the county decides whether an employee's recommended treatment is necessary if it wanted to, and that it's not a matter of they can't, but they won't.
My first comments to the Board of Supervisors, I said, this is your workers' comp program, self-funded. You hire utilization review, you can override utilization review. Interestingly enough, that same day, the California Department of Industrial Relations sent them a communication which said, this is a unique situation, and I'm quoting them, this is a unique situation which requires extraordinary action. You can override utilization review, end quote.
David Wirt, the spokesman for San Bernardino County, says it's not that simple.
A year, 2 years after the injury, when it comes to counseling, I suppose the county could override utilization review, but the state has made it clear if the county did override utilization review in those cases where it could be employed, most state auditors would come down and they'd probably put sanctions on the county and they'd review all the county's decisions.
I asked the State Department of Industrial Relations about that. Their Director of Communications, Erica Monterosa, told me that employees can approve treatments even if they're denied through utilization review, and that doing so would not lead to fines or an audit. But regardless of whether the county can override utilization review or not, Wirt says it's there for a reason, to protect patients from inappropriate or excessive treatment.
If a patient is undergoing some type of psychological therapy that isn't appropriate for what they're experiencing, or if it's not making them any better, but the doctor keeps prescribing it because the doctor is getting paid for every visit, that's when utilization review steps in and goes, hold on a minute, this isn't working. Why should this doctor keep collecting a weekly fee when perhaps another type of counseling is more appropriate or some other course of treatment?
Wirt says he doesn't believe that survivors have gone without treatment that they need because of any action by the county. He says that out of 3,000 individual treatments requested by the 59 survivors, less than 7% of those were denied. He also says that any delays in treatment were likely caused by the survivors' doctors failing to fill out the necessary paperwork to the county. He says that problem was basically solved when the county assigned nurse case managers to the survivors, and that if people are still experiencing delays or denials even after that, then it's for a good reason.
The people out there who are saying utilization review is a bad thing are primarily doctors and workers' comp attorneys, people who stand to profit by not having their work reviewed.
And besides, Wirt says, there haven't really been that many denials of treatment. The county's Office of Risk Management compiled the numbers. They found that out of 735 requests by survivors for psychological treatment since the day of the attack, 631 of those were approved. Most of those denials weren't appealed, and the ones that were appealed were mostly upheld.
Whether we approved something, denied something, needed more information, in more than 99% of those cases, the county made the right call. So, you know, as far as in those instances where people have been denied treatment, it really isn't the county's fault.
Wirt says he and the county are sympathetic to the survivors and recognize that they're frustrated by utilization review. But he says that the California workers' comp system is set up for things like a box falling on your foot or you slip and fall in the break room, not the kind of traumatic event these survivors went through. And that leads to a system that's not really prepared to deal with it.
Hopefully we have people up in Sacramento who are in a power to change that, working to change that. But the county as an employer has no choice but to follow that less than perfect process because there aren't any other options under the law.
Wirt also points out that utilization review protects patients from being overprescribed things like opioids. I asked him how that principle applies in the case of mental health counseling.
There seems to be a feeling out there that you can never have too much counseling. That counseling is always a good thing. If you could have it 7 days a week, that's better than having it 5 days a week. And on its face, whether or not you're in workers' comp, that's not the case. Endless counseling doesn't necessarily solve a problem.
Plus, he says, it can be hard to tell when counseling is working for someone.
If someone is undergoing therapy for 6 months or a year, and the reports filed by their own doctors show there is no improvement, there's an obligation on the part of workers' comp to say, wait a minute, nothing is happening here. We need to try something else.
Geraldine Lee, an attorney who represents 9 of the victims, doesn't buy that argument. She points out that nearly all of these survivors watched their coworkers be killed or played dead or hid in the bathroom as the shooters made their rounds. And based on that, she says they need regular therapy for a long time.
So you tell me that that is not someone who needs therapy, maybe for the rest of their life. These are civilians. These are not people trained in combat.
Lee says it's this kind of attitude, that counseling is a luxury rather than a necessity, that's made the process so hard for the survivors.
And that's why my clients are absolutely angry. It's probably why they're not getting better, you know, and because they're not getting any support from their employer. And as a result, they're getting spotty treatment, right? They have to wait for approval. Every time they go to their psychiatrist puts in another request for an additional, you know, 6 sessions of psychotherapy. We have to wait the 5 days. Then we have to wait for them to deny it. Then we have to wait for me to submit an appeal. Then we have to wait for the appeal to come back. And then it gets approved. And that's now what? Another 35 to 60 days later.
Lee also says the statistics we're cited are misleading because they don't account for delays and modifications. She says the only reason there are so many approvals is because requests were approved eventually, but that could be months later, and the approval might be for less than what was requested.
What they were doing is just denying them, making us have to work to appeal it to the Independent Medical Review, which is IMR, and then when it got up to the IMR process, then IMR would approve some of them.
You're listening to KVCR's special report on the survivors of the December 2nd terrorist attack in San Bernardino. Ray Britton is one of Lee's clients and Nicole Borkwin's brother-in-law. He was the supervisor of all the employees in the room at the time of the attack, and he was there that day but not physically injured. At his house, Britton shows me an example of a denial he received through utilization review.
This is what they needed changed in order to approve it. They needed the verbiage anticipatory anxiety, then it became approved. This is how cumbersome the process is.
Britton was denied psychotherapy after the incident, and since denials last a year, he couldn't revisit that request for 12 months.
I was denied psychotherapy from the beginning. Went all the way through the workman comp, the California State workman comp system, went to UR, non-certified, was appealed, independent medical review. The decision was upheld. I could not revisit that for over a year.
It took a media campaign to finally get Britton's therapy approved. About a year after the incident, a group of survivors started speaking to outlets like the New York Times and PBS about their struggles with workers' comp. And all that publicity did change the county's behavior. 19 months after the initial request, they finally approved his therapy.
After 19 months and a big media campaign and push on our part, the county and workman comp did start to approve some services. At that point, I had psychotherapy and EMDR, which was approved. Limited sessions, but they did make that approval. I don't believe that it would have been approved without the media exposure. I think it was a result of us bringing this out.
Britton says he doesn't believe the workers' comp system is well set up to deal with catastrophic injuries like the ones so many survivors received, but it's especially ill-equipped at dealing with PTSD.
PTSD, we're still learning a lot of the effects, but they look at it, and there's one camp that says, you know, there is no cure. It comes down to managing symptoms and regaining that quality of life. So on that basis, there's no proven result, so why treat? So I think we fell into that camp where the injuries were complex. They weren't a slam dunk. If you do this, you have a 90 or 100% chance of regaining full mobility. So we're just not going to treat. That's the system that we have in California. Unfortunately, that's the workers' comp system. It's an insurance company on steroids that's really playing the number game.
Britton says the frustration of dealing with the workers' comp system has led to secondary trauma for the survivors. And while he says he can't speak for all of them, none of the ones he keeps in contact with are satisfied with the process.
I don't know anyone that's satisfied with this process. And again, it's very complex. It's very humbling to be in the workman comp system. So nobody is satisfied. I think everybody wishes that this would occur. You know, if it had to occur, if it would have occurred outside of work hours, we all believe it would have been a much different outcome for healing. And everyone has experienced that level of secondary trauma.
That secondary trauma, he says, has continuing effects on the survivor's mental health.
So that sense of abandonment from what happened in the room to what's happening now, trying to get care and medical services, very similar in it, and they would feed on each other. So I believe that the way that this was handled and that secondary trauma that we talk about, it really kept the event from not being processed fully for us. It kept us in that high emotion state for a long time. Every month, you're faced with going to the doctor. You're faced with the fear. Are they going to find you permanent and stationary and cut your pay? You're faced with, are they going to deny your treatment? Even if they don't deny your treatment, you're looking at possibly a delay.
Stay tuned. After the break, we'll hear from another survivor, her attorney, and a San Bernardino County supervisor. Good afternoon. You're listening to 91.9 KVCR News. I'm KVCR reporter Benjamin Perper. Today, we're talking about the December 2nd, 2015 terrorist attack in San Bernardino. The attack left lasting scars on the city and the region, but it affected the survivors the most. Now, almost 3 years after the attack, KVCR is taking an in-depth look at the survivors, their mental health, and their struggle to get treatment through workers' comp. Part two of our special report begins now. Valerie Weber was one of the most severely injured out of everyone who survived the Inland Regional Center attack. She was shot twice by semi-automatic weapons and spent 93 days in the hospital immediately after the attack. She's had multiple extensive surgeries since then, and she still needs more. But her wounds aren't just physical, they're also psychological. Like Britton, Weber suffers from PTSD and depression as a direct result of her experience and injuries. But it's not just physical threats that set her off. Every time there's another mass shooting in the news, that does it too.
With all these other shootings that has happened since that time, people delay in telling me that these things have happened because they affect me. I don't even know the word to say on how they affect me.
That level of unpredictability with her PTSD symptoms means that it's especially hard when she's denied treatment.
I've gone a very, very long time without therapy. It was like catch and release in the first year and a half. I'd get therapy, I'd be happy, then I'd be denied. Then we'd have to fight, I'd get therapy. They would never honor the doctor's orders, and I was seeing a doctor from Workman's Comp.
Eventually, Weber decided to get a lawyer to help her get the treatment she needed and the benefit she's entitled to. For 2 years after the incident, Weber received what's called temporary total disability. That's income she gets while she's unable to work. She says San Bernardino County refused to give her an increase in her temporary total disability rate she was entitled to, according to a Memorandum of Understanding, or MOU, with her union. When the issue went to trial, the judge ruled in her favor. Gary Kaplan, Weber's lawyer, picks up the story from here.
The county, with the knowledge of this collective bargaining agreement, and knowing that they were required by law to increase the temporary total disability benefits for all of the people that fell within the category, didn't do it. In Ms. Weber's case, I wrote letters to the county and to their lawyers saying, here's the issues, and here's the collective bargaining agreement, you gotta give her a bump in her TD rate. They refused. So we were actually required to go to trial on the issue, believe it or not.
Public records of Weber's case obtained by KVCR show that the judge ruled in her favor and ended up fining the county of San Bernardino an unknown amount. They ended up paying Weber the full rate. For Kaplan, this is just another example of how the workers' comp system is not set up in workers' best interests.
It's not a system designed to provide treatment. It's not. It's a system designed to find a way to minimize medical treatment costs and maximize revenue to the carriers.
Kaplan says utilization review, or UR, limits the amount of care that employers have to provide. He also says the process where utilization review decisions are reviewed and adjudicated, called independent medical review, or IMR, serves only to uphold UR decisions.
So the bottom line is they control your doctors, they control the UR process, and the IMR process is meaningless.
Valerie Weber says her treatment has been going pretty well lately. She's been seeing less denials, and even the modified approvals are more substantial.
Less denials, and more approvals in the way that if the doctor asks for 24 visits, they'll give 12 instead of before they'd only give 6, you know, or sometimes even 18. So that's a longer span that I can continue to go. Then we can send another referral in. The doctor has to do that. And then they send it to Workman's Comp, and it's either approved or denied. So I've had more approvals for a longer length of time than I had had before.
I asked Weber to respond to David Wirt's assertion that utilization review is in the patient's best interest because it protects them from inappropriate treatment or things like overdosing. Weber tells me a story of how she was on antidepressants which were suddenly denied. If she hadn't ended up paying for the medication out of pocket, she would have had to stop that medication cold turkey.
Once you're on a psychotropic medication, you can't just be taken off of it. That's the time that you'll commit suicide or overdose. It's those kinds of situations. Again, I'm not a doctor, but I do know you're not allowed to stop cold turkey. So now what does the county have to say? How are you protecting me when you're taking medication away that states do not stop this medication at any time? You have to be weaned off of that medication.
Weber says she'd like to see legislation to change the way the system works.
I'd like legislation to change especially for catastrophic injuries. I'm not the only person that has been injured to this extent. Some are paraplegics and quads and things of that nature. And I think what the motto of Workman's Comp is deny them till they go away. And a lot of people don't have the stamina and will and maybe education that I have, and they fall through the cracks. And it saddens me very much because I'm one of the fortunate ones. You know, I was able to live, and hopefully the rest of my life will not be totally impacted in what has happened this 2.5 years.
You're listening to KVCR's special report on the survivors of the December 2nd terrorist attack in San Bernardino. There is one person who tried to change all this through legislation, and it didn't exactly go as planned. Eloise Reyes is a state assembly member and former workers' comp attorney whose district includes San Bernardino. As her first act of public office in 2016, she introduced a bill called AB 44 that would have waived the utilization review process for victims of a domestic terror attack.
As a workers' comp attorney, I know how utilization review has been used and abused. And I think that our survivors' stories clearly showed that they were not getting the treatment they needed to get better. When the county said that their hands were tied because of the way utilization review was written, or because of the way workers' comp laws were written, I knew that it had to be addressed.
But when AB 44 went to the Assembly Insurance Committee, the language on utilization review was unceremoniously removed from the bill. I asked Assemblymember Reyes to describe what happened.
You want me to describe my heartbreak? That was such an important part of the bill. And when it went to the insurance committee, they gutted my bill and presented a bill that was completely different than what I had proposed.
That gutting was presumably done by Assemblymember Tom Daley, the chair of the insurance committee. Daley wouldn't comment to KVCR on why utilization review was taken out of the bill, but doing so removed its most important feature. Instead of waiving utilization review, the new AB 44 only required that a nurse case manager be assigned to employees who are injured on the job by an act of domestic terrorism. It passed the insurance committee, and then it passed the assembly as a whole. Reyes voted yes. But she still feels that the survivors deserve better than the delays and denials they've had to face.
The truth is that it's unconscionable. We've heard this said many times, that they were victims not only on December 2nd, but they were victimized over and over by the county that they had given their life to as employees. That was their family. They considered the county their family, and to have that kind of treatment denied was unconscionable.
But there is another legislative body that could take action on this issue. That would be the San Bernardino County Board of Supervisors. Supervisors Robert Levengood, Janice Rutherford, Kurt Hagman, and Josie Gonzalez declined multiple requests for interviews on the subject. Supervisor James Ramos was the only one willing to speak with us.
You know, I'm not going to really get into that because you know, the people have gone through a lot.
However, the supervisor declined to comment on whether or not he thinks the survivors have been well treated by the county's workman comp system. He said the issue has become too politicized.
I'm not sure, and I don't really want to politicize what happened there as far as moving forward those areas.
But Ramos did say he has an open-door policy with the survivors to address any concerns they might have.
I've always had an open-door policy with those that were there. And again, I'm here. I've been able to talk to many of those that are there, and we continue to try to be that voice. You know, I'm not going to talk about to either politicize or do these things. Do they genuinely need to be remembered 365 days a year? Yes.
Valerie Weber confirmed that she did speak to Supervisor Ramos once over the phone. However, she also said she sent multiple emails to the supervisor in 2016 that she says were ignored. Now, almost 3 years after the attack, Robert Fredericks is not optimistic that survivors will ever receive adequate care for their PTSD.
You know, we are now much too far out, you know, over 2 years now, with nothing, you know, being done separately. And so one could wish, but, you know, the experience of the last 2 years, you know, I don't think that we can be optimistic. And so we're left with an unresolved tragedy.
Which brings us back to the memorial. I asked Fredericks if he could design the art installation commemorating the victims, what would it be?
Well, I'm not an artist, but I think of, you know, the facets, you know, of this whole tragedy. From the husband and wife bursting into the building and spraying, you know, the room. People getting hit and falling to the ground. Person with a pulverized pelvis. I think that would be one facet, one side, one face, you know, of a memorial. I could almost picture four quadrants, you know, to a memorial, that being one. You know, the husband and wife, I mean, it's graphic, it's gruesome, but it's real. I think the second one would be, you know, the first responders, you know, a fireman, paramedic, you know, on the scene. A law enforcement officer. The third side, I think, would be a person on a surgical table, you know, with the, you know, the surgical team around them, saving, you know, their lives. The fourth, I think, would be that you would have these survivors in the aftermath of all this. You might have a person in a wheelchair. On one level, on the outside, you know, looking well and strong, but looking vulnerable as well, because this is enduring. I mean, there will be two generations that will see the memorial when it is done. There will be living people, you know, for the duration of that time that are, you know, left behind.
For KVCR News, I'm Benjamin Perper.